you know, obviously being ambitious is like a blessing and a curse. Like even with our businesses, like you can imagine how much, you know, we're growing them and trying to grow them and going all different directions. And I get knockbacks. That is something like I still deal with all the time. And I think I'm just being real, like it's okay to be rejected and it's okay to have your doubt that maybe it won't work out.
Hello and welcome back to Red Lips and High Kicks, the podcast for today's movers, groovers and dancing dreamers. And I am your host, Lydia Holt. Today is an episode I could not be more excited about. She's a woman I admire so much. Her energy is the most pure and nourishing of its kind. She's a total girl boss. It's Claudia Dean. Claudia was a dancer at the Royal Ballet before deciding to move back home to Brisbane, Australia. The work she's done since moving home is mind-blowing, and she's really pioneered a new teaching method and style. She is a private coach, she has created a technique platform called Coach Me World, and has designed her own leotard range among many other products called Claudia Dean Collections. With over 250,000 YouTube subscribers, she's really reinvented the way teachers teach and could not be more real, relatable, and kind. Claudia really lets us in on how she built this empire and how she continues to do the work she loves. Plus, we have an inside scoop for what's coming next for her business, so make sure you stay listening to the end. Honestly, Claudia has such passion in her work and the energy shone through her voice into my ears and made me glow from the inside out. Thank you so much, Claudia, for your time, your generosity and your love. It was so great to sit down and talk to you. If you're new here, please hit subscribe on your podcasting app. That way you can stay up to date with any new episodes. And of course, you can follow us on Instagram at redlips.highkicks. I hope you love this episode because I sure do. And in the meantime, have a great day and stay excellent. Hello, Claudia. Thank you for joining me today.
Hello, Lydia. I'm so excited to be on the podcast.
And we just discussed, this is your first podcast. I feel truly honored to be here with you.
Oh, thank you. My first ever podcast. I'm so excited to be here as well.
Great. And we've just discussed, it's my morning, it's your afternoon. I'm feeling like fresh, ready for answers. And I'm sure you're probably like ready to digest and process those answers.
It's so. Okay. I'm used to working till like 11 o'clock at night sometimes. So it's all good.
Great. So let's waste no time. I'm excited to hear your favorite applause and your most important rejection.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to actually start with the rejection side of it because it kind of leads me into the applause. I sat down and I sort of thought about this, you know, quite hard. And I thought probably the most important rejection I ever had was, I mean, I can't really say the brand that it was, but I approached them to do a leotard collection collaboration with them. And they rejected me. They said, no, sorry, like we don't really want to go and dive into that with you. We'd sort of like, we've already got our own brand set up. We don't really feel the need to do that with you. And although, you know, at the time I felt a sense of rejection, but I think the biggest lesson that I ever learned from that was, okay, this is not going to stop me. I'm going to keep going. And I'm going to try and do this myself. Like, even though it's a big company, it would be so much easier to do it alongside them. How about I actually learn the ropes myself? And that was about 4 years ago now. And, you know, obviously I've had so many lessons since then. And I don't like to call them, you know, fails or anything like that. I like to call them lessons because I think they teach us to grow and adapt in some ways that we never thought we were capable of doing. I would say that was probably the most important rejection. And then in terms of this applause, I mean, I have this sense of like, I don't feel I've made it yet. You know, I feel like I have so much more to give. And for me to sit here and be like, oh yeah, this is a moment where I felt like I won. I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. So for me, I would just say, overall, in my whole journey, from that sense of rejection that I felt, I feel like from that moment, like how far our brands have come from absolutely nothing. Like, you know, I've built this from literally nothing, and how it's kind of like evolved into what it is now, I feel like is really cool. And I'm really proud of that. So I'd probably say, like, just overall, I would say that.
Nice. No, and that makes perfect sense. And I think it's such a good example of not waiting for permission, doing it yourself. Yeah. And actually, when you do it yourself, the reward, the applause is so much better because you'd started from scratch and you were there for every single step along the way. That makes perfect
sense. Totally. Totally. And I always say, like, you know, if there's anyone out there running a business or looking at running a business, I think you've got to wear all the hats at the start, because you learn every single aspect of the business. And if I hadn't have done that, then my path would have been easier, but I wouldn't have the knowledge that I have now in this whole manufacturing, creation, design world, whatever you want to call it. I'm in, I'm sort of in like a world of everything at the moment, but yeah, I'm really grateful for the lessons I've learned along the way.
Yeah, that's some really good advice. And it's obvious with exactly like you said, your brand, and you've kind of done that with your own company, is be the teacher, the director, the coach, or really the face of everything. And I think actually there's a lot to be said from that, and actually how successful you've been because you've done that.
Oh, thank you, Lydia. That's very kind of you.
You are so open on all your social media, and I think that is, you know, you're so adored from it. And I kind of want to go back to the moment that was probably quite pivotal for you, leaving the Royal Ballet. And again, on paper, and this is like on paper, we shouldn't even be, that shouldn't be a factor, but on paper, you had the perfect life. You had every girl's dream. Like, why would you ever leave that? And you've spoke about before that it was that gut instinct of just, I know this is the right answer. Can you tell us about that gut instinct? I think particularly dancers were so obedient. It can be difficult to kind of think for yourself and trust your own feelings. How did that feel?
I think, to be honest, when I look back on it now, like I recorded that YouTube video, like, you know, probably 3 years ago now. And now so much time has gone past. I'm obviously, you know, a bit more mature since back then. And I've had time to like reflect more on all those experiences. And to be honest with you, I think I was feeling for a while, probably like a year into when I joined the Royal Ballet, that it wasn't really for me anymore. I felt like at the school, I really thrived there, and I sort of was given so many opportunities, and I was like running on adrenaline all the time. Like Gaylene Stock, the director at the time, we honestly had this connection, and it was just very, I want to say the word easy. I worked very hard, but the opportunities were very easy for me to get. Then as soon as I went into the Royal Ballet, you know, you're in a company with about 100, 120 dancers, and they're all just as good as you, and if not better. and I found it very hard to get used to the fact of working my way up. Like all of a sudden I was at this school where I got all the main roles, and all of a sudden I was in this company and I was literally boom at the bottom. And at first I found it quite difficult to just get ahead. I didn't know what I should do to actually, like, you know, thrive and create opportunities for myself. And I think obviously with what I do now, you guys can all see that I tend to create a lot of opportunities. Like I, you know, create leotard collections, I create platforms like out of nowhere, and it's like I feel like I was destined to do that. And at the Royal Ballet, I almost felt a little bit stuck, and I think I was feeling like that for a long time. And I had a meeting with the director, Kevin, and like I have so much respect for him. I have so much respect for everyone in that company. I think they're all amazing at what they do and what they put up with and put their bodies through. But I finished this meeting with him, and I was really hoping to move up in the ranks a little bit because I'd performed soloist roles so much. And when he said that, you know, I wasn't, and that he really wanted me to, like, you know, keep refining my technique. And I was always very like, hey guys, like I was always very out there. And he said, you know, maybe work on like becoming a little bit more insular. And I came out of that meeting, I was like, this is not me. Like, what am I doing this for? Like, I feel like I'm losing myself. And that's when I honestly made the decision to stop.
Yeah. And it's so brave. And I think it should be done more of just being able to like think for yourself. It's hard. It's really, really hard. And I think we, especially at school, there's almost like always a carrot in front of us. We're always running and like, that's it. That's it. When I get that, everything will become clear. But actually those first few years of professional life, it's like, actually, like, where, you know, who am I doing this for now? Where am I in this thing? And I think it happens to so many more people. And it's so great to hear you talk about it as well, because we need to kind of normalize that.
Totally. And I think the other thing too, it comes to like your upbringing. Like my parents have all run businesses. My mom and my dad, they ran businesses when I was growing up, and I always was watching them like hustle and work so hard and create opportunities for themselves. And, you know, they always had like a very go-getter attitude. And I feel like I've obviously got that to a certain extent. And that was the reason why I often, like, I just go at opportunities. And if I don't feel like something's right, I really just go at it, because I know it's going to lead me to where I need to be. If you learn to trust that instinct. And I'm really into the whole self-development as well. I feel like it's really important. I'm trying to like really listen to my inner, because I know that's going to, you know, take me to where I want to be in life.
So interesting. It's really interesting. Yeah. And I guess the immediate aftermath of that, not only, I mean, obviously, you're, you know, you're sad, you're friends, you're kind of leaving this life that you've built for yourself.
Yeah.
But also, did you ever encounter people trying to persuade you that like, no, or I think you're going to regret it? And how did you, again, in that moment where you're sort of, you're not there yet, you're not back in Australia, you're not like built this business, so it's still just a thought. How did you kind of learn to combat that?
That's a really good question, because it was probably about like 2 months from when I resigned from the Royal Ballet to when I like flew back to Australia. So I almost had like a 2 month buffer where I sort of like, everyone knew what I was about to do. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go into real estate, into business. Like, I probably sounded like such an idiot. And they were like, are you okay, Claudia? And I'm like, yeah, I'm so happy. Like, I'm honestly really excited. And I think everyone probably honestly thought I was crazy, but I was like, this is what feels right. And I'm just going to like stuff it and follow it, because that's what I'm about. But yeah, you know, obviously the ex-director, Monica Mason, I'm sure a lot of you that are listening have heard of her. I have so much respect for her as well. And she gave me like a big talk about, you know, this decision. She even wrote me a personalized card and said like, are you sure this is the right thing? I obviously had so many messages from people, like my Facebook post that I put up telling everyone that I was leaving, like it got shared, like, I think it was like 800 times or something crazy. But I think I was still just like, it's what I need to do.
Yeah.
I just knew it wasn't right. And I'm like, it's time for me to go. And I'd felt like that, I think, for a while. And I mean, I know it's like sad to say, and I don't want to talk on behalf of other people at the Royal Ballet, but there are a lot of people there that feel that way, but aren't brave enough to make that move, because it's very daunting. I think as dancers, you dance your whole life. And you dance throughout your whole professional career. And there's so many moments where you're like, is this actually right for me? But because, you know, maybe you haven't finished your education, you haven't gone to university, you don't have anything else to back you up. So it's too scary to actually leave.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I don't know. My advice would be, if you feel really strongly about what you're doing isn't right, you're just better off following that, because it's going to take you somewhere else.
Yeah, and you're so right there. There's so many people that are just afraid. It's routine. It's all we know. And especially when we're like, you know, especially if you're in the Royal Ballet, you're like at the top of your field, and you know that wherever you go after this, it will be a step down, but it's not a step down forever. You'll go back up again. But it can be so frightening. And I think, and it can affect your work. So it is so important.
Absolutely. And I did have, as well, some other companies, like I think it was English National Ballet and Queensland Ballet, ask if I wanted to join. And I was actually dating one of the dancers that was at EMB at the time, and the director like offered me straight away a soloist contract with EMB and was like, if you come here right now, like that's it, like you can join our company as a soloist. And I was still like, nah, it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, because that would be the moment where you're like, oh well, this is actually in theory what I wanted, like surely I should just take it.
Totally. Yeah. I'm like an all or nothing person though. It was like at the Royal Ballet or don't do it at all.
I mean, it's a way to be, you know, it's a good way to be. And I think again, on your YouTube channels, you've gone into detail about how hard it was for you, you know, moving to Europe. I have the utmost respect for any Australians, Americans in Europe and vice versa, Europeans all over the world. I'm not that far from home, but I still find it really hard. And I think that's something we don't talk about enough. And again, I was so happy when you started talking about like the sacrifices that we make and the devotion. And I think in such a dedicated world, the minute you kind of complain or say, oh God, I'm really homesick, or is anyone else finding this hard? You're sort of like shamed and guilted into feeling like, well, you must not love it enough, and you know, you're just clearly not strong enough, and it's toxic, because then you bottle it up and you don't feel it. Talking openly, did you ever were you doing that as you grew up, or was it kind of come out at the end?
I felt like for me personally, I think a lot of people, when it comes to homesickness and everything, they experience it really heavily at the start, and then it like dies off and they can kind of just learn to deal with it. I was actually the opposite. So when I first arrived in London, like my first 3 years there, I honestly like hardly thought about like back home in Australia and what I would be doing. But then I don't know what it was. My last few years there, I just got worse and worse with my homesickness. Like I'd Skype my parents and they'd be like, oh, Claude's like, we're having a roast dinner tonight. And I'm like, oh, I wish I was there. Like I found it really hard actually towards the end. That was when I started to notice my homesickness the most. But yeah, at first it was fine for me. I think it really depends on the person, hey?
Yeah, no, it is. And I think like you said, as you get older, I think you start to have more life choices and you can design your life more. When you're at school, everyone has to be at school. And I think it's we have to choose the life we want and you have to prioritize things. And again, I think it's not done enough in the dance world to just be able to say, you know what, I want a nice life. I want to be able to be near my parents or not live in a very, very small, you know, tiny Eastern European town. And it's, and we need to be like, that's okay. Cause if that's what you need as a person, then like, don't do it. Like, don't go out there, just stay true to what feeds you, keeps you creative and actually keeps you working hard.
Exactly. I agree with you. And that was probably when like I probably noticed my needs were like shifting. Like I knew I kind of needed to be back home. It was like where I felt the most like confident, secure. And yeah, that's exactly right what you just said.
And what drew you to teaching? I think, you know, being a teacher is sort of like thrown around a lot for dancers, but you know, it's a full-time job. It's working with younger people often who, especially if, you know, you've got to such a high level you're at, you're like, well, I can't coach you on this really tough solo maybe right now.
How
did you get there and what keeps you there?
Sure. It's quite an interesting story, actually. So when I came back home, I immediately started working for my dad and my brother, who also have a real estate business called Dean Property Team. And basically I joined them and I was basically their like assistant. So I was like their left-hand person, just doing everything and doing all the admin and the invoicing and learning all about business, which was so vital at the time that I didn't realize, but it was really important for me to go through that. Anyway, then 6 months in, my old ballet teacher calls me out of the blue and she's like, hey, Claudia, like you're back home. Are you sure you don't want to do some teaching? And I'm like, oh no, Miss Bowen, like I'm really out of the dance scene. Like I sort of want to just keep doing my thing and like, I kept calling it like the real world. Like I just wanted to keep getting ahead in like a different world, I think. And she's like, oh, Claudia, come on, please. Like my students are dying to like learn from you. And I was like, okay, because it's you, Miss Bowen, I'll do it. So I agreed to this weekly summer school, you could say. And basically in this summer school, she had me scheduled to teach all these group classes, but she also had me scheduled to teach all these private lessons. So anyway, I taught the group class. It was the first day I taught the group class, like really enjoyed it. And I was like, geez, like I'm quite natural at this too. Like I love like the energy in the room. Like everyone seemed so positive and I was teaching them all my raw ballet techniques. And it was just like really, really fun, honestly. And like the 2 hours went by, like it was 30 minutes. Like it was really quite crazy. Then straight after that, I had a private lesson. And I finished a private lesson with this girl. Her name's Mackenzie. I still remember. And I actually coached her many years later as well at my studio. Anyway, and I had this private lesson and I was like afterwards, oh my God, like this is where I'm meant to be. Like I just loved private lessons. Like I just loved that I could work with someone, nurture them, teach them, like I guess on a personal level, how to actually transform their technique and how to make them feel good and confident about themselves. I feel like that's a gap that's really missing in the dance industry. Anyway, so I finished this weekly summer school and I got in the car. Mum picked me up because I didn't have my license. She was like, so how was it? Like you were dreading it, you know, just because you were so scared. Like, how did you find it? And I was like, Mum, I need to start up something. Like, I don't know what, but I need to start up something where I just teach private lessons because I'm obsessed. Like it's what I love to do. Every private lesson, I was just like so in awe of the dancers and trying to just like make them better and coach them and just work out ways to make them feel confident, like I said before. So that's what I did. I built my own website and I advertised it on Facebook. And I honestly, from that moment, I never stopped. Like,
really?
I hired out every studio in Brisbane. I was like running from one studio when they couldn't, like if I could go from 7 a.m. to 12 p.m. at their studio and they said, oh, Claudia, now you've got to get out because we've got another class coming in. So then I'd hire another studio. I'd drive on the other side of Brisbane and hire their studio from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. at night. And I was doing that for about a year. Wow. And it was just back to back, constant. so many new people coming through and meeting me, and it was so much fun. And then I was like, okay, time to get my own private lesson studio. And that's like the studio that you see in all the photos. So it's yeah, amazing. That's how it all began.
And like, I just love hearing you talk like that. Like, it sounds so magnetic and like, you know, like an epiphany moment. It's so lovely to hear that.
I had to tell my dad and my brother. I was like, hey guys, like, I'm getting so busy with this coaching, I can't like work for you anymore. And they were like, oh, it's all right, but oh my God, enjoy it.
Yeah, no, and it's such a good example of like, you left the Royal Ballet and you could have, again, people might be like, oh, it's a waste, but actually it's like, no, it was driving you, like, yeah, all that knowledge was never in vain, it was pushing you towards the main thing.
Yeah, literally, which is what it is now. Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. And you say there, which I just love, is actually you were teaching confidence, and you know, on your website it's mindset is one of the biggest words you see, and I think that's so important, and I think is so like cool and good that you do, because yeah, I was never taught that, and I don't think many people are ever taught how to be confident. What's the first thing that they say to you, like, walk into the room, feel good, smile, and if good. You don't know how it can be so hard. What are your like you have a girl, she's underconfident, how do you build that up? How do you maybe start from scratch and make them believe in themselves?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I wouldn't say it's anything that I say. I would say it's like the energy I bring to the room. Like, I know for a fact, like, even for photo shoots, so sometimes like the dancers will get there before me, and it will be like Simona and the dancers, and Simona will be like setting them up with the makeup artists and the hairstylists, and like everything will just be kind of normal. And then like I'll walk in and I'll be like, hello everyone. And I feel like it's an energy. And I feel like as soon as people are around that, they shift and they change, and I can see it in their eyes. And like, even in the studio, like, that's just a photo shoot example, but even in the studio, if I say, okay, Annabella, do this, this, this to change the pirouette, and she listens and she does it, and like the smile on their face is just, again, it's like magnetic. And that is so inspiring to me. And that's when I'm like, yes, like, I know I'm helping someone's confidence and well-being. And I think it's just, it's how I also, I guess, deliver corrections, because a lot of the time, like, I've definitely worked with my fair share of negative teachers, where they sort of say, you know, oh, your pirouette's off, or your legs aren't high enough, and they don't tell you how to fix it. So I dealt with that for years, right? So I've definitely learned that, you know, instead of saying your pirouette's off, tell them what's off. So I like to say, Sarah, if you shift both of your hips over the top of your supporting big toe, you're going to stay up. And then boom, what happens? They try it. They've listened to, they've, you know, digested what I've said, and then it happens. And I think that is like probably the biggest difference with what I know that I bring to the table. It's like how I say things and the energy behind it.
Yeah. And that makes such sense. You're right. I don't think I've ever been delivered a correction as like passionately as that, because it is more often than not like, just do this, or you're not doing it. And there's not the instruction of how. And I think, have you encountered that resistance from maybe old teachers, or who are a bit maybe stuck in tradition and are a bit confused by, I guess, your new way of a new method of delivering? Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Like, even, you know, if we wind back the clock like 5 years, like even me starting Instagram and YouTube, like, I mean, I have to kind of say, like, there honestly wasn't many people doing what I do on social media that many years ago. Like, I really feel like, I'm not going to say I paved somewhat like a, I don't know, this coaching way, but in a way, like, I never saw anyone else doing what I was doing. So I was definitely like almost just following what I felt was right and I connected with.
Yeah.
And I think definitely, like, I've heard so many stories, like students have come in and said, oh, my teacher said this about you, or you know, other teachers will just come up to me at events and be like, oh, you know, like the YouTube thing, like really putting it down. And I'm like, wait a minute. it's really worked for me. And I think I'm really open-minded. I'm not someone that like is closed-minded to ideas. And I think that's probably the biggest thing I've learned, like, in business and in this world, is you just have to be able to adapt. Especially last year with COVID, I think everyone had to learn how to adapt. And I feel like we pivoted quite easily because we've been doing that for years already. And a lot of dance schools and a lot of people were suffering because they weren't pivoting. Like, yeah, that's sort of what I have to say. I'm going off, you know, on a different topic now, but that's sort of like my take on it though. I think I've definitely had my fair share of people making comments and all that.
Yeah. And I think, and like you just said, that it's not adapting to the real world. I mean, it's like social media is probably the most, it's advertising, it's trends, it's like, totally. It's everything at the moment. And I think, especially if like dance for such a long time, particularly ballet, has been stuck in the past and their old ways of doing things. And actually it's bringing in that new energy that is the exact thing it needs. And like you just said, it's working. It's clearly working.
Yeah.
And I think
it's
the relatability. And I think that is something that's massively missing in dance. Exactly. Is the relatability, the like the funness, the lightness, because it can get so heavy so quickly. And again, it shouldn't have this sort of like stereotype of everyone looking quite sad and mean teachers. Like, why can't it be fun? Right. Why can't it be full of life and love and energy? And you've done that.
Yeah, and that's what I've really tried to do. And I think the biggest thing as well is just staying genuine to who I was, like, you know, and who I am. You know how I just said before, like, it's the energy that I love to bring to the table. And that goes through my social media as well. It's not just like when you meet me in person or you have a lesson with me. It's like I try and bring that on every platform possible because that's genuine to who I am. I think if there's someone out there that's, you know, doing things that aren't genuine to who they are, people just see through it, you know. It doesn't really align very well, but I've really just followed what feels right, and that's where it's kind of led me.
Yeah, no, and I can tell you, I'm talking to her right now, she is genuine. I'm like full of energy. It's really early in the morning, but I'm like, it's ready. Good.
You're ready to go.
Ready to go, exactly. So funny. And you touched upon like the Coach Me World there, and I think it's you were doing distance coaching well before coronavirus. Yeah. And you had the platform ready to go, and I'm sure so many people were looking to you going, right, how do we get our exercises online, how do we get our dance classes online?
Totally.
And you guys were ahead of the game. Can you tell us about how that started?
Yeah, of course. So obviously we had our YouTube channel set up for years, and I feel like, you know, we've built up a very like loyal, I guess, audience there who are always engaged with learning new exercises. And that's been amazing, right? And I'm so thankful I did that years and years and years ago. And yeah, so basically when COVID-19 hit, you could say, we were already building Coach Me World. But we were building like almost the like mini version of it, which we initially called Claudia Dean World Live.
Okay.
And we started that in probably the January, but then COVID got quite serious. And it was like really, it was everywhere by like, I think it was about March.
Yeah.
But we'd already started that platform. I was already working on all the content for Coach Me World. I think it was November of 2019. Wow. I was spending hours and hours. I was up till midnight every night getting all the content ready because we were going to begin filming in February 2020, which is like just before COVID happened. Anyway, things got a little bit delayed, but when COVID, you know, I guess got to its stage where like everyone was experiencing around the world, I was having so many messages like, hey, Claudia, like, I love your YouTube channel, but now that this has happened, can you please upload some more warm-up bars? Can you please do this? Can you please do that? Anyway, so we have another business partner and we spoke to him about it because he builds and basically you could say liaises with all of our developers on building our websites and everything. So he said, okay, Claudia, like, we're already in the making of Coach Me World. We can basically just speed it up. And you go into filming next week. I had to film for 2 weeks straight, literally 2 weeks straight. And it was the most exhausting thing I've ever done, but I'm so glad I did it. And I didn't know why I was doing it. I was like, why am I rushing to do this? And our business partner was like, no, Claudia, just do it. Because I guarantee you that in a couple of weeks, things are going to be really bad. So I was like, okay, right, I'm just going to do it. And I just did it. He built the platform and then we launched it. We launched this Claudia Dean World Live. And the website initially crashed because it had like 25,000 people trying to go on there because no one had any classes.
Yeah.
And... and then basically it crashed so bad it took a month to recover. So that was when, he recovered it. And then from there, like, it sort of was reborn again. But yeah, we were sort of like, as you said, like ahead of it and already thinking about ways where more people around the world could access coaching and key exercises and all of that, which I'm thankful for.
Yeah. And it, like we've just said, it goes into that thinking like now, not just always doing things how they used to be done. It's being adaptable, yes. And it's like taking it, and it's like your, you know, your world tour of a ballet masterclass, like that's never been done. That's never really been done. And like I remember seeing it coming to London and being like, yeah, why is not being done? Like, why has no one thought of this? Like, that's so obvious. Yeah. Like, and like how many like girls would be running to get a place.
I know, it's so
it's just so exciting to see someone like think on their feet and think now. And I think, you know, so much of that, I think, I imagine, and tell me if I'm wrong, comes from the age. I think so often, you know, teachers happen when they're older, and you know, and that's okay, because their main career has been the ballet, and that's, you know, that's great. And then so they don't maybe put as much energy and as much focus to the teaching as, and because you pivoted young, you're seeing it with fresh eyes, you're seeing it with the eyes of a closer age to your audience, and therefore what you can bring is so much more effective.
Yeah, actually, that's so true. I've never really thought of it in that way, because I often thought, you know, I wonder why someone doesn't do the world tours, like, you know, why that hadn't been done. And I remember telling my mom about that idea, like, you know, 4 years ago. I said, Mom, like, I just kind of had this epiphany, like I could do these classes and everyone could come along, and I do it in Brisbane and let's just see how it goes, and then maybe I could go around the world. And Mum's like, yeah, go for it, sweetie, like go for it, like just do it. And you know, that's what I would do. And I think you know, although it costs a lot of money, and you know, doing those intensives, to do one intensive, I think our first one, I think that costs close to like $60,000 to hire out the stage, to get all the techs, like the technicians, staff, like just to manage the whole thing. It costs a lot, and it's a big risk, but I'm always willing to take that risk, and it always, you know, touch wood, it always pays off in the right way for us.
yeah. But again, taking risks, like what good has come from staying still?
Yeah, exactly.
And we talked about your kind of introduction into business when you were doing real estate, but there's kind of two things I want to talk about. That is not only the reality of becoming a businesswoman, but also like the emotional side of it. And the reality is that, you know, dancers, we don't have university degrees. We've not been around other business people. I mean, you say your parents were, which will always give you an insight. But those first kind of learning the way and finding your feet, not only as a when you were in the real estate, but particularly by yourself, what did you learn? What were you surprised by? And like, was there anything that dance kind of taught you that actually was really useful when it came to business?
Yeah, business. I mean, business is like a whole nother world, in my opinion. I don't think anything can like quite prepare you. And when I sort of talk about that, I'm probably mainly speaking about like the whole manufacturing and creating leotards and all of that. That world, nothing can prepare you for it. Like, it is very hard, very difficult to find, I guess, really good manufacturers and good team of people around you to actually make it all happen. That has probably been the biggest learning curve, and probably, you know, nothing that I did in dance has actually kind of, that sounds so negative. That's probably the worst thing I've ever said, but it honestly hasn't helped. I mean, the only thing that would help is that I always know what dancers want, because I was a dancer. And I think that has always been my biggest thing, is that, and like you said, with the age as well, I'm so close as well with my students. Like, I always love talking openly with them. Like, hey, Lola, like, what do you love about this leotard? What don't you like about leotard? Just be honest, tell me. And she has that relationship with me where she's like, oh, Claude's like, I reckon you should change this. And I'll be like, yeah, exactly, I agree, let's go do it. And like, I feel like I've always had that relationship, which has always really helped me in that way. But yeah, in terms of like collections and leotards and everything, the business side has been a very big learning curve for me. And there's been a lot of times where I've been like, this is far too hard. Like, I actually did a YouTube video today about that topic.
Wow.
I actually did a big YouTube video about it, because there were so many aspects. Like, I've gone through the ringer with manufacturers. Like, I feel like I've gone through things where I think I've been set up on purpose to fail. I've had to sue manufacturers. I've had to do a lot, and I've learned so much about that world that I'm very grateful for. But in terms of like running, you know, Claudia Dean world and that business side, I honestly just stick to what is genuine. And that is why I find it quite natural and easy. Like, a lot of people are like, Claudia, how did you think of that? And I'm like, it just comes to me, because it's like, it's what I love to do. I honestly just do what I love to do. I don't I don't say yes to things that I don't want to do. And I make sure that I say no to things that I don't want to do and that I know don't align with me, because I know it won't work out the way I want it to. And I think that's a very important thing to learn in business, if you can. If you feel like something's not right, if you feel like you need to change something, if you feel like you wanted to launch a project in October and it's October and it's not quite right, don't launch it. Like, wait till it's right. Wait till it's perfect. That's probably the biggest bit of advice I could give someone that's like, you know, trying to go into business and all of that.
And the emotional side of it, particularly, I think. Dance, like, you know, again, I've said it before, we're quite obedient, we do what we're told, and, you know, there's kind of a clear path for us. But leaving that, and as we've said before, you kind of set up something that hasn't existed before and that still doesn't really. And when you are, you know, every day grinding away, working really hard, are you ever scared? Are you ever, you know, nervous and fearful, because you don't really know what your future holds and you're worried about things that you don't know about yet? How do you deal with the emotional side?
I think now not so much, because the business has gotten to such an amazing point where we have like 10 businesses in one business. So it's not like I'm relying off one aspect of the business. Like, I'm not just relying off the tours for our sole income, but like to make us survive. I'm not relying on that. I'm relying off so many different areas and different avenues. And I feel like that's one thing we've really mastered. And as I said, it's not over yet. Like, I'm still working on so many new projects to like have 20 businesses in one business. Like, I'm never going to stop. But actually, going back to like what you said, like, is there anything in dance that you think has helped you in business? Yeah. I would actually say I just sort of thought of this. Definitely dedication and hard work. One thing that I know with ballet, for me personally, I never found it easy. Like, I didn't have good feet. I had bent knees. I didn't really have the right look, looking back on myself. Like, I didn't really have, like, you know how dancers have that natural aesthetic, like really long look. Like, that's what everyone wants to be. I didn't really have that. You know, at the Royal Ballet School, I was called bulky. You know, even the director was like, Claudia, what are we going to do with your muscles? Like, you know, we just got to try and lengthen them out a bit. And like, I guess I didn't always find it easy in terms of that sense. But one thing I know I definitely had was a very hard work ethic. And I think that has probably been the biggest thing with like what I do now. I don't like to stop. Like, I just keep going and I just like don't look back. I just keep moving forward. And I think that's probably one thing that has really helped as well.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, I've thought this about a lot of people. I've had friends who've gone into university or have done other things. And I think that passion, dedication and work ethic that we have is so transferable, and I think does really set you apart. And I think that's why people like to hire ballet dancers or to, you know, they'd like, oh, wow, that takes hard work. So, you know, you must have something about you.
Totally. And like, even one of our staff members, Ailish, her work ethic is just like insane. And I always say to her, like, Ailish, like, you work so hard and I really value that. And I think it's because she's got that dance background, you know, she like trained for Garnova and like, she knows hard work. And I really love that in people. So I think that's important.
And this kind of goes into my next question as well, which is finding that work-life balance. I think it does very trickle into one to the other, especially like as a dancer when you're young. Work is your life. Like, and it's completely your life. You move, like, all your friends are the people you work with. Like, it's totally your life. Now, as you've gotten older, and especially now that your work is so much about you, like we've said, it's so much genuine, it's so much about you and your brand. How do you turn it off sometimes and decide when it's too much and when you're maybe just a bit unsteady?
Yeah, sure. I think one thing that I really wanted to change about our business last year, like during the whole pandemic and whatnot, was that I really wanted to make everything a bit more real and actually show people a bit more like behind the scenes on what it takes to start a leotard collection, what it takes to set up a platform. Like, I really wanted to make it my mission that when you go into Claudia Dean World, it's not like ballet coaching, it's lifestyle as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing that I love doing. Like, I actually love my content just being everyday content that I'm already doing in real life. Like, if I'm at the shops buying Christmas decorations for the big Christmas tree that is being hung up for our collection. Like, I'll literally take people behind the scenes and be like, guys, do I get this decoration or this one? Or just like random things like that. Or even I'll be at the supermarket and ask people, do you like oranges or apples? Like, I like to just take people along with like my everyday journey. So I don't ever really get the feeling where I'm like, oh my God, I need to switch off, because I'm not trying to be something that I'm not. It's literally just genuinely me. Yeah. And the only time, you know, where I might need a bit of switch off is like maybe from Instagram occasionally, like, you know, talking to the camera. And I guess like I show up every single day on Instagram. I really make it a big thing. Like, I want to show up for these young dancers that are needing inspiration. But sometimes, you know, I do need my little days off. And if, you know, business is really hectic, like we've got 50 zillion things flying around at once, like I might not have the time to talk to the camera and be like, hey guys, you know, I'm going to motivate you today. Like, sometimes that's quite hard, but
yeah.
Otherwise, like I said before, I really just take everyone along with my everyday journey. So it doesn't really interrupt, or it doesn't really feel like unnatural to me.
Okay.
Or like I need to have big time off.
Yeah, yeah, which is good. I mean, you don't want to drive yourself to the point where you need to. So it's really impressive that you've kind of got that balance pretty even.
Yeah. And I think even as well, like with the whole mindset journey that I'm sort of like going through as well, like, again, because I'm going through that, I'm trying to like educate people through that as well, like just subtly. I'm not like slamming it down people's throats, but, you know, I'll be like, hey guys, stare at the sky like I am for 8 counts, or like just breathe in and look at this, you know, beautiful tree and just like take it in for a moment, like trying to like tell people that it's okay to like slow down as well, but this is what I'm to like look after me, so maybe it can help someone.
Yeah And it goes, yeah. You're very open as well about how you manifest and this positive energy that honestly like is shining off my screen. I need some sunglasses. So you're really open and into that. And it's something that I feel like particularly I'm going through a lot at the moment, actually, and hopefully other people are as well, is finding the line between being ambitious and driven and excited and positive, but then also dealing with your doubts. And I think I do this thing where I'm like, it's all going to work out. And it's like, think about it, you know, project it, you're going to do it. And then I've thought about it so much that it's like really in my brain, it's three-dimensional.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, but what if you don't? Because now you've really created it in your brain and now you have something to lose. How do you kind of balance the two and learn to be ambitious but stay grounded?
But still grounded. Yeah, I think like when it comes to doubts, like I don't have many, I have to say. Like I am pretty naturally very ambitious, but I will say if I'm having a moment and I'm like, oh, but what if that doesn't work? What I am trying to do at the moment for myself is actually like reverse the thought and go, I'm going to try and imagine how I'd feel if I have it. Okay. So like, let's just say, for example, I want a purple leotard and like, you know, it's the only thing that I want. I've written it on my vision board. I've got it on my whiteboard and like, that's what I want. Right. This is just an example. And I have my doubts. I'm looking at the big staircase going, oh my God, the purple leotard is what I want. But like, I might not be looking at the baby steps. I often say to people, like, actually go through the baby steps on how you're going to get the purple leotard. Like, don't keep looking at the purple leotard because it's going to be too overwhelming. Like, start thinking about baby steps and start thinking how you'd feel if and when you got the purple leotard, because that is actually making your brain and body believe that you have it.
Okay.
So I am really big on that too, like actually putting my mind and body in the mindset that I have it. And another thing is too, like, I just want to be like real, you know, obviously being ambitious is like a blessing and a curse. Like even with our businesses, like you can imagine how much, you know, we're growing them and trying to grow them and going all different directions. And I get knockbacks all the time. Like I'll have this amazing idea and I'll think of, oh my God, like this person would be incredible to do this, to come onto the platform and do this. And I'll literally email them and be like, yes, you're going to come on. Like, this is exactly what I want. And like, you know, no reply, or it just is too hard. It doesn't align. And like, that is something like I still deal with all the time. And I think I'm just being real, like it's okay to be rejected and it's okay to have your doubt that maybe it won't work out. But I think again, whatever's meant to happen honestly will in its right time and moment.
Yeah. And you are for sure, Evan, you know, you're proof of that. And I think that's, it's definitely important to remember that. Cause it's something I yo-yo between like, The two, and I'm sure lots of other people too. And what would be your advice for particularly young dancers right now who are in this sort of weird state? I mean, Australia, you guys have kind of managed it so much better than the rest of the world.
Europe is
really struggling with coronavirus still. I mean, you know, theatres are not open. I think schools have only just gone back. And there is this sort of roadblock in the way. What would be your advice to young dancers to stay motivated, stay excited, and to not be, you know, taken aback by this adversity?
I would say I get this like DM a lot from like obviously so many European dancers and just dancers dealing with this at the moment. I always say like find a hobby, find something that is actually like outside of what you're used to. Like whether that's drawing, whether that is painting, whether that's fitness, like try and actually find something that is going to take you away from, just for a moment, away from what you're used to, because I feel like that is when you grow. That's when you learn to adapt. You might think of a new idea. You might be doing a workout and go, oh my God, like maybe that's the reason why this hadn't improved in ballet class, because this muscle was weak. Like you actually might discover a lot about yourself. And I think instead of wasting time thinking about what coulda, shoulda, or would have happened if you were still, you know, dancing normally, I think don't put that energy in that direction. Just try and put it into something new. Try and figure out a plan C, B, D, Z, whatever it is, and put some new energy in a different avenue, because, yeah, spending it in like that other avenue isn't really going to do you any good or anyone around you any good.
Yeah, no, it's really good advice. Yeah. And I think it's, my heart goes out to so many students, particularly at the moment. It's really unpleasant.
It is sad, because I think like there's a lot of dancers out there that would be like 15, 16, and it's in their prime time of, you know, joining a school or, but I think again, you know, I've told a lot of people in Australia who obviously have, you know, schools in their hometown, like the Queensland Ballet or the Australian Ballet, which is in Melbourne. I'm like, maybe it's time we utilize those, you know, instead of trying to rush overseas, what about we utilize like the amazing schools we've got here? And I think like that's what I'd recommend as well for dancers overseas, like perhaps like really educate yourself on like what you've actually got around you that you can use.
Yeah, that's very practical. That's very good advice, actually. Yeah. And my last question, I promise I will.
Yeah.
I will.
No, that's all right. That's all good. It's okay.
What's next? What's next for Tony Dean World? What's next for Coach Me World? I wanted to get the inside scoop.
let me bring up my document folder, because we're planning a lot of projects. I'll tell you what I can and can't say. Honestly, I can probably give you a bit of a rundown on what we're doing this year, because I'm like very open about it nowadays. So the next big thing that we actually have happening for our dancewear side of things, like for Collections by Claudia, I mean Claudia Dean Collections, I always make that mistake. We changed the name a year ago and I'm like, I'm still getting confused. So Claudia Dean Collections and Coach Me Wear, we're changing all of our packaging to more sustainable, eco-friendly, biodegradable packaging. So that's a very big project that we're working on at the moment. It's just like a very lengthy project, because we're producing like thousands and thousands of garments and accessories. So it does take a lot of time, but we're working on that. Ignore my puppy, Gigi. This is very demanding. Then straight after that, I've got a very big limited edition collection coming out. That's like, I feel like the theme of that is going to make everyone go, oh my God. We're actually also in the process of finding a new business venue, because we've outgrown our current space. So that's another really big thing that we're doing at the moment. And that's going to be a big transition. What else do I have? I'm working on a lot of new accessories, and I do have a big announcement that like everyone can get involved in that's happening around June, July.
Okay.
I can't say too much about it, but look, we work in like a year in advance. Like we are constantly working on new things. So there's a lot.
Great. No, this is all. I'll write it all down in my diary and make sure that I get there first. So thank you for this.
Stay tuned for June, July. No. We have a lot.
Thank you so much, Claudia. This has been everything I'd hoped and more. Thank you. You've That's got right. so much energy. This is really, it's been a ray of sunshine. So thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Lydia, for having me. I've honestly loved it so much. It's been really good first podcast. Thank you.